Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. I'm happy you're dreaming with me. This is Way of the Dreamer, the show where we affirm the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination. I have a very special guest today. He's not very far away. I'm going to talk to the dream traveler of me, Robert, the one who gets around in dreams. And some of you dream about it, seems, because I want to celebrate, as a pushy author, the birth of my new book. It's called Mysterious Realities, and the subtitle is A Dream Traveler's Tales from the Imaginal Realm. It's published as nonfiction, though its stories might, to some people, read like fantasy or fiction. It is really a collection of just-so travelogues. By just-so, I mean real experiences being lived in the various worlds, parallel worlds, other worlds, worlds of the dead or alive, worlds in ordinary reality where things become different because of the play of synchronicity. You know what that means, that special moment you get shivers. You feel that something beyond your ordinary understanding is coming to give you a secret handshake, give you a wink, push you back. So Mysterious Realities is a book about this, about travels, waking or sleeping or in between, into various worlds of magic and wonder, including the magical world that will open to us when we acquire the gift of seeing the extraordinary in the ordinary. I want to start by telling you about how this book came to publication. It's out now. Mysterious Realities is out now. You can get it at your bookstore. You can get it from the usual online suspects. You can get an e-book edition. And as you can hear, the author of the book is very excited and proud to be doing something a bit different from what he's done before. My creative daemon is happy with me, I think, in this respect. So let me tell you about how this book came to publication. It's a synchronicity story, and maybe it will speak to you. So I was doing one of my workshops in Berkeley, where I appear a couple of times a year, just around the corner from 4th Street, with all those interesting bookshops and stores and bistros and so on. And I'm walking out of the workshop with my coordinator on the way to dinner on the Sunday evening after the workshop. And as we're walking, I'm talking to her about three things. I'm talking about Pegasus. You know who Pegasus is, the winged horse. I'm talking in particular about how in the legends, in the myths, Pegasus opens the springs of inspiration, the springs of the muses, by stamping his hooves very hard. So I'm talking about Pegasus. And I'm talking about the idea that I have a bunch of stories I've written and left maybe part-finished or half-finished over the years that are almost complete. I have a collection of almost complete stories that might be waiting for publication. I'm talking about a third theme, the idea that at any moment, we might be living another life. I feel it quite often. Do you? You're living your life. You're doing this or that. You're going to dinner. You're going to the workshop. You're doing the job. You're with the hubby or the partner. And you feel that another part of you, another self of you, is doing something else somewhere else. The sense many of us have, supported by science with many worlds theory. The idea that you might be living more than one life. So I'm talking to my friend and coordinator about the idea that I am living more than one life right now. Three themes. Pegasus, almost complete stories, and I might be living more than one life. So I'm walking on the street, and across the street, I see Pegasus. I see the splendid white winged horse on the front of a bookshop. So, of course, I can't wait. I say, bye for now. I've got to see this. I run across the street. In Berkeley, fortunately, motorists tend to be cordial and friendly and patient with pedestrians, so they don't actually run me over as I run across the street without looking at the cars. And I'm in the threshold of the bookshop. I'm in the doorway of the Pegasus bookshop. And at eye level, on a shelf inside the bookshop, I see my name, my surname, Moss, on the spine of the book. And I look at the title, and the title is Almost Complete Poem. Pretty close. And right next to that book is another poetry book whose title is I Must Be Living Twice. Three hits. I'm talking about three things, Pegasus, almost complete literary productions, and I must be living twice. So this feels like a huge nod from the world to go ahead with the project I've been vaguely discussing. And the next day, in the way of synchronicity, I'm having lunch with my favorite editor, my editor at New World Live, which published a lot of my books, including the new one, Mysterious Realities. And as Georgia and I meet in an Italian restaurant in the Bay Area, I'm about to tell her my idea for a collection of almost complete stories. But before I can speak and before the wine is delivered by the server, she says, Robert, the book I want you to write next, I'd love you to write next, is a collection of your travel stories, of your travels in this world and other worlds, parallel worlds, worlds the dead or alive, all of that. So by about the time the wine is served, we've made a deal. We've made a deal for publication. So this is a very actually practical story. If I'm a mystic, I'm a practical mystic. It's a story about how things come into manifestation. If we pay attention to the special moments, the nods and winks from the universe, that are going on all around us every day. So now we're going to get to the interview with the traveler. And I'm actually going to indulge myself by asking the traveler of me, who will speak in a similar voice. I'm not going to put on some funny voice, not channeling some other entity. I'm simply going to speak to the part of me, the side of me that gets out and about quite often in one world or another. I'm going to ask some questions that people often put to me, that interviewers put to me on their radio shows and their programs, and see how you enjoy it. And in the course of this, I'm probably going to tell you some of the stories from the book, because I think you'll enjoy them. This book is different from my other books because the stories stand alone. So you read about an author who has a close-up and terrifying, perhaps, encounter with his personal death, who takes the form of Lord Yama, known in the East, and who can appear as a smoking, dark mountain, something like a cosmic meat grinder working away inside his belly, and can also speak like a civilized, Oxbridge-educated Maharaja when he's in a good mood. So you read about my deal with my death. It really frames the book. My deal with my death is I've got to go and turning out stories of entertaining my death, and I'll be allowed to stay around as long as I do that. So I'm living, in a sense, the story of Scheherazade. That's the myth I feel I'm living right now. Got to come up with a new story every night or every day. How about that? That's part of what you'll find in this book. So let me proceed with the interview with the traveler, the traveling Robert. By the way, some of you dream of me. On an average day, I receive 40 reports with some specific details of people near and far, known to me or not, who dream of me. I guess we dream of each other. And, of course, some of these dreams are projections. You dream of someone you call Robert or George Clooney or Angelina Jolie or whatever. There might be the part of you that is projected out and is coming back to you in the dream. You think of that person, it's actually not that person, it's part of you. So some of those dreams are like that, but in some of the other dreams, I think actually it was a social dream. Ancient indigenous peoples understand that dreaming is social and transpersonal, not just private and personal, but social and transpersonal. We get out there, we get around, we meet each other, we have adventures, we make visits and we receive visitations. So this is part of entering the theme of what it is to travel in dreams and be a dream traveler. So let me ask the first question to my traveling self. What is this dream travel? And how do we become dream travelers? And by way of response, I'm going to offer you this. In ancient and indigenous understanding, dreaming is traveling. In big dreams, we make visits and we receive visitations. This is what I heard when I first started dreaming in the Mohawk Indian language of an ancient woman of power and an elder, a faith keeper at Onondaga, the traditional center of the Confederacy of the Longhouse, asked me about my dreams. When I told him my dreams of flying on the wings of a hawk into the precinct of an ancient woman, shaman, mother of the wolf clan, woman of power, and other things that went on, he said to me quite simply, Robert, you've been making visits and you've been receiving visitations. There we see it in the indigenous voice. Our ancestors understood this. Dreaming isn't just about what goes on in the bargain basement of the personal subconscious. It's not just Freudian. It's not just anything. Dreams can take many forms. There are big dreams, there are little dreams. There are dreams that are processing what you ate last night and how you felt about it and what you went through yesterday and left unresolved. But dreaming might also be about traveling, traveling to other realms, traveling to hidden dimensions, traveling to places of ancestral wisdom, traveling to places of healing and initiation, places of terror and beauty. So I was hearing that in my life 30 years ago when I started dreaming in an indigenous language, which I had to learn because of my dreams, and a faith keeper, an elder of that tradition, said to me quite simply, hearing my dreams, Robert. He made some visits. He received some visitations. So in dreams, in the ancient understanding and in the experience of ordinary dreamers in ordinary situations today who remember their dreams and pay attention, we travel across time and space. We go to places where the dead are alive. Maybe you've done that. Actually, our encounters with the dead, the so-called dead, in which they visit us and seem to be alive, or where we go into their realm and learn how they're living, these are the principal source of personal belief, personal experience, that consciousness survives death, so that's very important. And we visit other realities. We visit parallel worlds where we're leading parallel lives. Yes, we'll come further into that in a moment. Once we connect with our dreams and wake up to what's going on, we can begin to develop the practice of lucid dream travel, which is what I've been practicing and teaching for a long time, lucid dream travel. And an ideal departure lounge, if you're interested in doing this in your own life, is the half-dream state of what sleep researchers call hypnagogia. You know it. You've been there. Do you remember the old Disney movie of Peter Pan? Peter's sad because his fairy friend Tinkerbell is going away. And Tink says to Peter, quote, "Look for me in the place between sleep and awake. There I will always love you. There you will find me." Great wisdom from the Hollywood scriptwriter. It's not in the original novel by Mr. Barry. It's in the Hollywood script, and it's good. Look for me in the place between sleep and awake. So if you want to start developing the practice of dream travel, lucid dream travel, this is a good departure lounge. You're not awake, you're not asleep, you're somewhere in between. Maybe you woke up in the middle of the night. Maybe you've got to go to the bathroom. Maybe do something else. Maybe you need a snack. But whenever you come back to bed, you want to lie in horizontal meditation, in a state of relaxed attention or attentive relaxation, and see what rises. Images will come. Maybe a dream you're in, a dream you're engaged in before you woke up, will come back to you and you can go on with it. Maybe a new image will rise and you can travel with it. So in that drifty state, if you learn to maintain that state of relaxed attention, you might find you're receiving a whole travel bureau, a travel brochure, a whole menu of possibilities for lucid dream travel. I think of this as the twilight zone. I'm not talking Ron Serling exactly, but we're talking about that space, that liminal space, where you might discover you have the ability to travel easily without nonsense beyond the body. I often find myself in that state, lifting out of the body quite effortlessly with no bumps or grinds or nonsense. Sometimes when tired, I simply rest half in, half out of my physical form. Sometimes I find in this liminal space I float up to the ceiling. Quite often I go flying like a bird over my sleeping city into places far away. I'm talking to you as a dream traveler about one of the royal roads to lucid dreaming that are open to you. Some of my friends write books on lucid dreaming and offer all sorts of things, mnemonics and other things, to help you wake up to the fact that you're dreaming inside the dream. Look at your hands. That's the old Castaneda thing. Actually, the easiest way to become a lucid dreamer is to start out conscious or lucid and stay that way. So this is one of the secrets of becoming a lucid dream traveler. Start out conscious, stay conscious, start out in that hypnagogic zone between sleep and awake. Or, this is something fundamental in my practice, learn to go back inside a dream you've been in. A dream is also a place, when you think about it. In your dreams, you're not usually in a fog. Or not only in a fog, you're not usually simply on cloud nine. You're somewhere. You're in a building, you're in a landscape, you're in a school, you're in a temple, you're in a pleasure palace, you're on a beach. Because you've been to that place in a dream, you can go there again. So one of the things to learn, if you're going to become a dream traveler, is how to use a personal dream as a portal, as a doorway, and travel consciously through the doorway of the remembered dream and do more. Why would you do that? Well, you might want more information. You want to know what's going on. There might be someone inside the dream you'd like to talk to, so you might want to go back into the dream, talk to your departed grandmother, or the angel, or the demona, whatever appeared in your dream. You might want to go to dance with the bear. You might want to go back inside a dream because it was scary and you ran away. It's time to brave up and face the power that might be waiting for you inside the dream. You're willing to go back inside and confront its mystery, its terror maybe, and go forward to resolution, to healing. Jung used to call that kind of stuff active imagination. We're a bit more shamanic than that, though I love Jung and I love active imagination. We learn to travel with or without drumming. I use drumming in the workshops, but not so much in my private experience. I use the energy and the intention more than the drumming. Learning to go back inside a dream is great practice for a dream traveler. You might want, as I say, to re-enter a dream to clarify what's going on or talk to someone inside the dream, or because there's something terrifying to be overcome, or a mystery to be explored, or simply because you were having wonderful fun and adventure and you'd like to have more. You're with your lover in Tahiti. Why not go back and not pay for the air ticket and have more fun? So those are a few words about becoming a dream traveler. Now, one of the stories in my book, Mysterious Realities, is called Dream Takers. And it paints a pretty scary picture of what it's going to be like, what it is like, when a society loses its dreams. We're on the edge of that right now in our culture, in our world. People are losing their dreams. Dream drought is almost endemic. And it's a serious blight. It's a serious problem. Because if you're not in touch with your dreams, then maybe you're not listening to a wiser and more objective source of knowing is available to the ordinary mind. I mean, your dreams may be a voice of conscience. Maybe a source of course correction. You're screwing up in ordinary life. Your dreams might hold up a magic mirror, shocking or humorous from time to time, to show you exactly what your actions and behavior look like from an objective point of view. So if we have lost our dreams, we've lost, in a sense, our connection with a source of wisdom beyond the ordinary. And a society that's losing its dreams might be losing its soul, not just in terms of individual soul loss, but in terms of the ability of the society itself to find its bearings, to sustain its compass. And this sounds pretty familiar today. Look at where we are. Look at the hollow men who purport to lead our country and how soul gone they may be and how occupied by strange things they might be because they've lost their dreams and lost the part of their soul that is the dreamer. In indigenous cultures, dream loss is regarded as a terrible epidemic, a terrible malaise. In the Iroquois tradition, which I had to study because of my own dreams, they say bluntly, you've lost your dreams, it's because you've lost a vital part of your soul. That might have happened early in life through what shamans call soul loss. You've heard about that? The world is too cold or too cruel, so part of you goes away. Your magical child goes away because the world seems a place you don't want to be. So helping the dream bereft to bring back their dreams might be part of bringing lost souls back into the lives and bodies where they belong. In my story, Dream Takers, in the book, I describe the society that's losing its dreams. And then I describe a shamanic journey of the kind that I help to facilitate for others and practice myself, a shamanic journey to help return dream souls to people who have lost them. This is vital. This is vital practice. And you'll find it in a wildly animated story called Dream Takers. If you are one of those who has been losing dreams or wants to help other people lose dreams, I guess I should talk to you briefly about some of the ways we can help to coax the dreams to come back, and with the dreams, the dream soul, the magical child, the beautiful dreamer who might have gone missing, might have gone out there living on the dark side of the moon or a garden behind the moon. There are ways in which we can help to break a dream drought any night we want to give this a go. You can set a dreamy, juicy intention for the night and then be ready to record whatever's with you when you wake up. You can resolve, this is important and not said often enough, you can resolve to be kind to your dream fragments. You know, you wake up, you say, I've got nothing, and you think again you might have a little bit of something, a sense of color, a bit of a song, a wisp, a breadcrumb. The wispiest trace of a dream can be exciting to play with, and when you play with it, you might find you're bringing back part of a previously forgotten dream. So that might be part of calling the dreams and even the dream soul home. You don't remember a dream when you first wake up? Wiggle around in bed, laze in bed for a while, roll around, get back into the postures your body was in during the night. Sometimes when you get your posture back into the shape it was in when you were dreaming, the dream itself comes back. If you find you still don't have a dream, write something down. Take up the practice of journaling. There's no substitute for keeping a journal. It's a place for you to dialogue with your soul and recall the experiences of your soul from dreams and from other places. So write something down. You're saying, when you write something in your journal, you're saying to your dream producers or the sources of your dream or your dream traveling self, I'm here. I'm listening. Talk to me. I'm ready. You may find, even when your dreams have gone, you know, you have a hangover from the night, good or bad. Sometimes the night gives us a sense of clarity and direction we didn't have before the night. We solve problems in our sleep, even when we don't remember the problem-solving process that went on in our dreaming mind. And finally, on this theme of breaking a dream drought for yourself or helping others to do that, We need to remember we don't need to go to sleep in order to dream. The incidents of waking life will speak to us like dream symbols if we're willing to pay attention. The world around you is a field of dreams full of signs and symbols and special moments of synchronicity. So we want to keep a lookout for the first unusual or striking thing that enters our field of perception anywhere and ask whether there's a message here. When we make it our game to pay attention to coincidence and symbolic pop-ups in everyday life, we oil the dream gates so they let more through from the night. So that's fundamental. If you want to be a dream traveler, you need some dreams, right? You need to remember. Sometimes it's hard to remember because you come out of a dream, you step out of another world, the world of the dream, and it's like a big bank vault door slams shut behind you and you can't figure out how to open it. But those are ways to begin to renew your connection, to open the spigots again, to open the taps of dreaming. I mentioned the need to recognize that we are dreaming in the world around us if we'll pay attention. I invented a word called chiromancy. People ask about that. What is chiromancy? How does that work? What's going on here? Well, Jung gave us the word synchronicity. And by the way, there's a story about Jung in Mysterious Realities, my new book, about what Jung's been doing since he died. In the other Bollingen, you know, before Jung died, he talked about dreaming of the other Bollingen. Bollingen was his name, was the name of the village near the tower he built as a personal sanctuary on Lake Zurich, which was very important to him, full of his symbols, full of his imagination, a place where he had private time and dream in his own way. Before he died, he started telling those close to him he was dreaming about the other Bollingen, his tower on the other side of death. And these dreams, he told his intimates, had removed any fear of death. He knew where he was going. He's ready to go. So I discovered leading one journey at a villa in Transylvania, of course, in the mountains, great place. I discovered what Jung might be doing in the other Bollingen since he died, and the new book that he's been writing, which he regards as his masterwork. You can read about that in Mysterious Realities. It's not the red book, it's the purple book. And its name in Latin translates as the Book of Heaven. And the title of the introduction is something hilarious. The title of the introduction, in my dream of Jung, to his book about dreams and reality composed on the other side, the title to his prologue to his new book is Why I Am Not a Jungian. But in the spirit of Jung, let me recollect that he gave us the word synchronicity, which is a scholar, because he was fed up with people getting tongue-tied and confused when they tried to talk about coincidence. I can't improve on synchronicity. I tried to find another term. I thought about old ones, correspondence, sympathy, all sorts of things, confluence. But I invented a new word, chiromancy, and after the break, I'll explain to you what it means and how, as you become a chiromancer, which sounds romantic and mysterious, does it not, you are ready to live fully in the dream of everyday life. So you're listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Mouse. I'm talking unashamedly about my new book, Mysterious Realities. We'll be back more to hear with the dream traveler whose adventures are told therein after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
So we're talking, this is Robert Moss, this is The Way of the Dreamer, my radio show. We're talking about my new book, Mysterious Realities. I hope you've been inspired to go and get a copy and send it to everybody you love. And we're talking about what is the source of many of the most amazing stories in the book, including the story of the Death's Head dominatrix on the plane. I'll leave you to find that for yourself. We're talking about the practice of chiromancy. Now, I wanted a new word to describe meaningful coincidence. Jung gave us synchronicity. I wasn't altogether happy, but I really failed to come up with anything interesting. So I decided what I really needed, what we really need, is a word for the practice of navigating by synchronicity. The practice, in other words, of being alert and alive to meaningful coincidence, symbolic pop-ups and events in the world around us. And I invented the word chiromancy. It borrows the name of the Greek god of time. Kronos is the dominant Greek god of time. Kronos is the god of linear time, tick-tock time. We hear his name in chronology, right? Chronometer, etc. Tick-tock, linear time. But Kairos is another god of time, but he's not a god of tick-tock, boring, linear time. He's the god of jump time, opportunity time. The Greeks depicted him as a handsome youth who's naked except for a lock of hair falling over his forehead. There we get the phrase, catch time by the forelock. He's slippery, he's quick, he's evasive. When Kairos turns up, you've got to grab him immediately or the moment is gone. So this is the god, this is the personification of special moments. So I put the name of Kairos, the god of special moments, together with the mancy bit, which is about divination, and I came up with chiromancy. So this is divination by special moments. But the chiromancer word, it means a little bit more. If you're a chiromancer, it means you not only notice special moments, get messages from them. You're poised to act in special moments when the universe gets personal. That's a way of describing how we feel when meaningful coincidence strikes. We know it in our shivers. We know it in our bones. We know it in our guts. Time is different. It feels sometimes as if something behind the veil of our ordinary perception is pushing or poking or tickling us through that veil to bring us awake to something, pushing us back maybe, giving us a nod, giving us a wink, calling us on. So the chiromancer is someone who is forever poised to notice special moments when the world is operating differently, moments when time seems to change. Jung once said to Moshe Eliade, who's the subject of another of my stories in Mysterious Realities, I describe Eliade's life in the Vado, in the afterlife transition. It's an interesting tale. Jung once said to Eliade, synchronicity, briefly, he said, a rupture in time. I couldn't find that phrase anywhere else in Jung's work. He said it once to Eliade, synchronicity, a rupture in time. We feel that, don't we? Sometimes, as a meaningful coincidence, you feel as if time has stopped or expanded, but if something outside the regular field of time, the regular order of events, is coming through from a deeper place. So when we pay attention, if we're becoming chiromancers, we find that we're given signs by the world around us every day, like a street sign. The synchronistic event may seem to say stop or go, dead end or fast lane. Beyond those signs, we might find ourselves moving in a field of symbolic resonance, which not only reflects back our inner themes and preoccupations, but provides confirmation or course correction. Through the weaving of synchronicity, there are these special moments of meaningful symbolism and coincidence. We may be brought awake and alive to a hidden order of events, to the understory of our world and our lives. You don't need to travel far to encounter powers of the deeper world or hear oracles speak. You're at the center of the multidimensional universe right now. Extraordinary lies in plain sight in the midst of the ordinary if only you pay attention. The doors to the other world open from wherever you are, and the traffic moves both ways. So this is what some of the travelers' tales and mysterious realities is all about from my personal experience. Some of them are mediated by travels on airplanes. You've gone through airports, perhaps. Airports are so much like a Bardo state, aren't they, a liminal state, going from one level of reality to another. When I lead journeys to guide people for helpful and timely communication with people on the other side of death, sometimes I guide them to a certain kind of airport, and then they travel on in the workshops. We use the shamanic drumming to take them there to a place on the other side. They board a silver jet, which is not a regular plane, and they go somewhere. Well, this is an experience that I have routinely traveling through airports. Things turn up in extraordinary ways in the midst of the ordinary. And so some of my stories of synchronicity are travelers' tales of what happens when you're on the road of life, going to an airport, catching a plane, making a chance encounter, having a strange conversation, which opens things up. And we notice in travels like this, the power of magnetism. We're all magnetic, whether we recognize it or not. We attract or repel things according to the energy and the ideas and the feelings we are carrying. This is the infamous law of attraction, and it works. Been misstated and simplified and trivialized by the New Age, but the law of attraction is always operating. So some of my stories come from the stories given to me by chance encounters on the roads of life and on the airways. So, you know, if you want to be a chiromancer, you have to check your attitude as you walk the roads of this world. Because, you know, your attitude goes ahead of you, generating events around the next corner. You need to develop a personal science of shivers. You want to take your dreams more literally and the events of waking life more symbolically. You want to take care of your poetic health, reading what rhymes in a day or a season. You want to learn to expect the unexpected, to make friends with surprises, and never miss that special moment when the universe gives you an invisible wink or handshake. All right. So I'm going to continue my interview with the traveler of me, the one who gets out and about all the time, and particularly the one who gets out and about in dreams and dreamlike states and journeys. I'm going to put a question to me and myself that is often put by other interviewers and people who are curious and want to know more. I'm often asked about parallel lives and parallel worlds because I know they're there and I travel in them. And lots of people find it fascinating to think and receive ways of concerning that while we're doing whatever we think we're doing, there's another self of us who's doing something else in another life, in a continuous experience that is running on an event track parallel to our present lives. So let me sound slightly scientific for a moment. I'm capable of doing that. You know, in physics, we have the theory of many worlds. It's a hypothesis first floated by a brilliant Princeton postgrad called Hugh Everett back in the 60s. He said that at every moment the universe is splitting off, creating a parallel universe. An uncountable number of parallel universes, and he fleshed this out in a dissertation, and nobody took him seriously that year. We're going to pause for a break, but you know what? After the break, I want to address another question that's often put to me. It's about parallel worlds, parallel lives. Maybe you've had the intuition, had the sense, that while you're doing whatever you think you're doing, there's a parallel you that's doing something else a bit further away. Let's talk about that. You're listening to The Way of the Dreamer, radio show with Robert Moss, and we're talking about my new book, Mysterious Realities. We'll be back in a moment.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Here's a question that the traveler gets, the question I get as the traveler. Quote, many of your stories involve awakening to the possibility that we are living parallel lives in parallel worlds. How can we explore this for ourselves? So now I'm going to respond. I'm going to get scientific for a moment. In physics, the hypothesis of many interactive worlds suggests that we live right now in one of countless parallel universes that impact each other. Part of the secret logic of our lives may be that our paths in life constantly interweave with those of numberless parallel souls. The gifts and failings of these alternate selves may influence us when our paths converge in ways we generally fail to recognize. We are connected, I think, in a multidimensional drama, and this may generate events in our current life and in a parallel life, or many of them, that will appear as chance happenings to those who cannot find the pattern that transcends time. The hidden hand suggested by synchronistic events that I was talking about may be that of another personality within our multidimensional reality, reaching to us from what we normally perceive as past or future, or from a parallel and other dimension. Let's make this more personal. Let's make this more direct. Let's bring this into your daily experience. You've experienced déjà vu, yes? Déjà vu is when you sense that you've been in a situation, in a place, in front of a certain person before, but there's no ordinary explanation for that. You have not been at this place or with this person in ordinary reality before. Well, it's possible that the reason you have that sense of déjà vu is that your parallel self got to this meeting, got to this place, got to this person before you. It's also possible that you dreamed it before you encountered it in waking reality. And the two things are not actually contradictory at all. You may have dreamed it, and your dream might have been of a parallel self who's been traveling ahead of you. Actually, your dreams, if you'll journal them and pay attention, are your best way of confirming for yourself the possible reality of that you are living a parallel life in a parallel world, and maybe many of them. If you're journaling your dreams long term, you might begin to notice that you are having serial dreams. H.G. Wells, the writer, once called them consecutive dreams. It's not just the same dream coming again and again. It's a serial. It's a dream running in installments. You're with people in a certain place, not in your ordinary reality, and then there's a scene later on and things have moved along. There's another scene and things have moved along again. And when you look at it, sometimes these scenes, sometimes these stories are similar to your current life. Sometimes they're wildly different. But however they happen to be or happen to seem, you get the sense that, wait, you're leading some kind of continuous existence somewhere else. Later in his life, Jung came to believe that we are leading continuous lives in other realities, and that our dreams might be glimpses of those continuous lives. This is a very fertile theme for exploration. In Mysterious Realities, you'll see me describe how it is, not in the way of theory, not in the way of how-to exercises, but simply through stories of people slipping back and forth from one life, from one parallel existence to another. In one of my own stories, Dream Interruptus, I'm in a romantic situation with someone who I parted company with a long time ago, so I'm having, let's say, a parallel life experience with a former partner no longer in my life, and that's going pretty well, although there are some frustrations, but it's going okay. Then I'm called out of that parallel life situation to deal with something in a hospital where someone needs help undergoing general anesthesia in hospital. I have to go and support her. So I'm pulled out of a parallel life dream into an alternate reality dream where I am actually assisting someone who at the time contemporaneously needed help in the hospital. You might find this kind of thing interesting, switching back and forth. Parallel worlds, parallel lives, it gets very interesting to think about. And you know what, when we start exploring this kind of thing, we're at the cutting edge of science, as well as in very interesting experiential areas. Because science, as I say, is now, physics at least, is now very sympathetic to the idea of many worlds, many parallel worlds. Brian Greene, popularizer of physics and a good physicist, says, maybe we have endless doppelgangers, endless doubles in countless parallel universes, and this is something going on all the time. Some of the stories in Mysterious Realities involve the dead who are living somewhere else. Some involve famous people. The story about Jung in the afterlife, and the story about Meshe Eliade, the great Romanian writer who brought the idea of shamanism to the world and did much else, going through his bardo states. So, you know, one of the questions I'm often asked is about relations with the dead. My stories are full of encounters with the dead, and so is my life. And I would say this, I'm often among the dead in my dreams. Maybe you are too. I find when I dream of people who've died to this world, they're usually alive. In fact, they're almost always alive. Sometimes when I'm seeing them some transitional passage, I might see a body they're leaving behind, but typically the dead in my dreams and maybe in yours are alive. And why would that be? It's because the dead are alive somewhere else. Dreams of the departed, still being alive, are the principal source of the widespread and continuing human belief that consciousness survives death. And it's scientific evidence of that. You know, the dead appear in our dreams as living, which they are, for three reasons, which are not weird, not supernatural, not really strange. The deceased appear in our dreams because, and in our other impressions, and sometimes they leave a physical impress. Sometimes we feel their presence in other ways. The deceased appear in our lives, in our dreams, and in our intuition, and in our impressions, because they're either still around, they haven't moved on, which might be good, bad, or mixed, or because they come visiting, or because we travel to their realms, and that goes on in dreams quite a lot. So, you know, some of my dreams and some of my stories are about encounters with the deceased. I was leading a group journey with shamanic drumming at a villa in Europe, and I was leading them through a gateway which came to me from my own dreams, which I used many times. In my original dream, I'm walking in a pleasant cemetery, a nice place to take a walk, dappled light, beautiful vaults and headstones, and I noticed in the cemetery there's some brightly painted cabin-sized buildings at the edge of the cemetery, which is surprising because they're so bright, they're so colorful, they're different colors, wild colors. I'm drawn to a little cabin which is royal blue with yellow trim, and I enter the cabin, and I feel at home there, and there's a rocker rocking as if someone's just got out of it. And on the far side, there's no wall. There's a beautiful cove, white sand beach, a beautiful woman in a sarong-like garment holding a conch shell, and I step into the water, and she hands me the conch shell, and I listen. She gives me instructions for making a crossing by water to an island on the horizon. I understand this is an afterlife location, a happy one. It's a good place to go. And the whole dream is deepened by a voiceover when I'm walking through the cemetery saying, you must prepare your houses of death. So that dream, which is a spontaneous dream, is one that I developed and journey into and guided other people into in order to find a safe passage to cross to the other side shamanically in a visionary journey and talk to people in a helpful way who are living on the other side of death. So that's the background. So I'm leading a journey with a drum for a group of people and offering them this portal, and I'm saying, well, you're going to go through this, your own house of death, and you'll find a place of water, possible crossing to the other side. And when I enter my cabin, it's not as I expect. There are things there I haven't seen before. There's a rack with jars of tobacco and pipes, and I don't smoke pipes, and I can't understand. And I look, and the scene has changed. It's not the ocean, it's a lake, and there's a boat in the lake, a simple dinghy. And in the boat is a man wearing a straw boater and smoking a pipe, and I think, my goodness, that is Jung. Can it really be Jung? And it seems to be Jung in my journey. I'm going to a group, I'm deep inside the journey, and Jung takes me immediately to this where he seems to be living after death. And he won't show me all that much, but he tells me a few things, and he gives me a glimpse of the purple book, the Book of Heaven. He's been writing since death, which is his master work. Can this really be Jung? Well, I'm not arrogant or egotistical to think it's necessary the individual spirit of Jung, though it felt like it. It could be his personality essence. It could be a part of me that's like Jung. But read the story for yourself and see how you feel about what Jung says, about what he's learned, and how he's growing in understanding since death, what his relations with Freud are now. So this is one of the encounters with the notable dead, the eminent dead in my book, Mysterious Realities. But I would say that all of us have easy and natural access to the departed any time we're open for it, and it can set us challenges because they might need help from us, and it can also be a source of healing, forgiveness, and guidance. This is Robert Moss. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer, talking about my new book, Mysterious Realities, and we will be back after the break.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance
active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Welcome back. This is Robert Knopf. This is Way of the Dreamer, the radio show. I'm talking unabashedly about my new book, Mysterious Realities, subtitled A Dream Traveler's Tales from the Imaginal Realm. We're talking about contact with the deceased in dreams and in other ways, and I said earlier it's not strange, it's not weird, it's natural. I've been doing it for a long time. I must say, as a personal note, that my contact with my father after his death more than 30 years ago was a tremendous source of family guidance. He became an everyday counselor, an everyday angel almost of the family giving us information, mostly through me and my dreams that we needed, and showing me his transitions on the other side. And then he went off to do something else, and he showed me the decision he'd made, and then he came back. Then he came back a few years ago. I was surprised to see him, not because he was dead, but because he'd gone on to another life, as I understood it. He appeared on a high rooftop, and I'm in a drifty state between sleep and awake. There he is, says Dad. And suddenly I'm in front of him, and he touches my upper lip, and he says, go to a doctor and have that checked out. So I did. I called the dermatologist in the morning. It was a spot of skin cancer, easy to deal with if you have it dealt with, but I'm not always quick to go to doctors. So it took my deceased father coming back from a long way away to give me that advisory. This is available to all of us. Of course, sometimes the deceased need help from us. Yeats said with poetic clarity, the living have the ability to assist the imaginations of the dead. One of the most remarkable stories in my new book, Mysterious Realities, is about that. It's called The Silent Lovers. It's a just-so story. In other words, it's exactly as it played out. I rise out of the dream, I go back inside the dream, and I'm amazed to discover, I was shocked as it unfolded, that I had been called upon to play guide for a dead man from a previous generation, otherwise a stranger to me completely. He's going through a life review on the other side. He needs help with that. He needs an advocate. He needs someone to help him to understand his new life choices. And I'm humbled and dazzled by the fact that it seems as if I was called in a dream state and then in the lucid dream reentry, going back inside the dream, to play advocate and guide someone who would not ordinarily have been particularly simpatico from my point of view. As he goes through a life review, looking at the choices he made and looking at what he regrets from his life and discovering what new life options are available to him, read it, The Silent Lovers. It might really confirm or grow your understanding of all that is possible in a healing way between the living and the so-called dead. Okay, the subtitle of my book uses the phrase imaginal realm, a dream traveler's tales from imaginal realm. This is a phrase that is not exactly, you know, a household phrase, so I guess I should say something about what is this imaginal realm, what is this realm of true imagination. I want to say this to you. This is a place that you may have access to if you've got the courage and imagination and the desire to learn more, because they're talking about places in non-ordinary reality that poets, mystics, and shamans always wanted to go to. Places of creative gestation, places of inspiration, places of contact between the human and more than human, places of initiation and education and transformation and deep healing. So I'll say this about the imaginal realm. There is a world between time and eternity, with structures created by thought that outlast anything on earth. This is the imaginal realm. You may enter it through the gate of dreams, or through the gate of death, or on nights when you leave your body. Here you will find schools and palaces, places of adventure, healing, and initiation. The imaginal realm. It's a fundamental ground of knowledge and experience. In this realm, human imagination meets intelligences from higher realities, and they co-construct places of healing, instruction, and initiation. Here ideas and powers beyond the grasp of the ordinary human mind, call them archetypes, tutelary spirits, gods, or daemons, take on guises humans can begin to perceive and understand. The great medieval Sufi philosopher Surawadi insisted both on the objective reality of the imaginal realm and that the way to grasp it is the way of experience. He wrote, pilgrims of the spirit succeed in contemplating this world, and they find their every object as their desire. to know this realm of true imagination, you must go there yourself. Happily for you, once you wake up to what's going on, the doors may open to you any night in dreams, or in the fertile place between sleep and awake, or in a special moment of synchronicity, when the universe gets personal and you know through your shivers the greater powers are in play. So that's a little bit about the imaginal realm. Let's not forget the fun. Some of the stories in mysterious realities about situations we know very well. You keep having the same dream, right? And maybe you're frustrated to set up. Why do I have to have the same dream? So a doctor, a physician from England, who is doing one of my trainings that teaches back to dreaming, says to me at the breakfast table one morning, in very bad language, is not a usual style. She's usually very gracious and very civilized, very contained. Robert, why do I keep having the same effing dream, she says. And I say, tell me. She says, well, I have the same effing dream that's come again. I am fed up with it. I dream I don't have my, I haven't passed my medical exam, I'm taking my medical exam, got to do it, and I did it 30 years ago, and why am I having the same messing dream? And she's very agitated. So I'm listening to her, and I look at her, and I say spontaneously, you know what, my dear, just imagine that there is a film production crew on the other side of the bay that makes dreams for you and makes dreams for all of us from time to time to educate us, to prepare us for a situation. And they are so effing fed up with having to make the same dream to you because you either won't get the message or you won't act upon it. I start unfolding a scenario, hilarious scenario, in which there's a whole film production crew in non-ordinary reality, in dream reality, that is staging dreams for the doctor. And she's being given the dream about having to take exams again because she has to learn something, go through some new training or reorientation for new phases of her life. But the crew is so fed up that the actors are fed up with playing the same roles, they're threatening to go on strike. So as the rest of the production crew, up in the gods, you might remember, the high seats in a theater are called the gods. Up in the gods, the ultimate supervisors are concerned because you still won't get the message, and the production crew is fractious and fed up, and they might walk out. So I wrote a story called When the Same Dream Keeps Playing to animate the idea. Amongst all the other things going on in dreaming, including traveling and visitations and all of that, we do, in some of our dreams, see a theatrical element. Some sources, wiser and maybe more humorous than we ordinarily are actually producing dreams, staging dreams for us, to bring us awake to something we need to understand or need to do. So I would say this to you. If you've been in this situation having the same effing dream, whether you call it that or something else, maybe it's because it's time to really get the message, and maybe it's time to take action upon it, because it's not enough to get the message. Dreams require action. In another story, Mysterious Realities, I'm sitting next to a dominatrix, literally, with a top hat and death's heads on the back of her fingerless gloves, drinking creme de menthe. She wants to drink creme de menthe. She only gets vodka. Having an amazing conversation. She says at some point to me, do you think the dead appear to us in our dreams? She doesn't know who I am. I say, absolutely. She says, oh, good, because my dead husband appeared to me last week. He was shot in the face in a diner in Seattle last year, she says. He was a musician, popular musician. And she says, my dead husband said, I've got an interesting job now. I'm doing music and special effects for dreams that are being produced for people that will be screened in the night for them. She says to me, what do you think of that? I said, of course, it's a great story. It's actually part of how things operate. I think. You know, we're magnets in life. Do you know that? We talked about the law of attraction briefly. We attract or repel things according to the energy or ideas that we carry. I am a storyteller, and my great pleasure is to incite or entice other people to braver stories and to live those stories and to tell those stories better and better, maybe to tell those stories so well they want to manifest in the world. That's what I like to do, and because I'm like that, I find that stories are constantly flocking around me. One morning, just a quick example, not in the book, not in the serious realities, I was headed for an airport, and I actually said as I arrived at the airport, I don't need a new story today, because sometimes stories are mediated by screw-ups, misconnections, etc. So I say, as I arrive at the airport, I don't need a story right now, and I arrive at the airport bar, I'm in Australia, and I have a beer any time I can. There's a ruddy, friendly fellow at the bar who turns to me and says, you look like a guy who would like to hear a story. I say, yes, absolutely. He says, he's a cop, retired cop in the East Bay area. He says, well, it's funny, last week I'm walking a cemetery in an area I've never been before. I'm thinking about a woman I loved 30 years ago and could never have. I look at the headstone in front of me. It has her name and a death date from the summer. I think it can't be her. I call, and it is her. She died, and she was buried in the cemetery, and I knew nothing about it. What do you think? I said, of course, is a very good story. You're listening to Where the Dream is, Robert Moss. We'll be back basically to say hail and farewell after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Right, I hope you've had fun with my guest today. I've had fun. Reckless undertaking to interview myself, but you know what? I enjoyed it, and I hope you did too. And I hope you'll go and find Mysterious Realities. Sorry for playing pushy author, but I'm very proud of this book and the stories, and I think they might light up some things in your mind and your life. So as we go forward on the roads of life and the roads of dreaming, may our doors and gates and paths be open, and may the doors and gates and paths of any who wish to do us or those we love any harm be closed. May it be so. May your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.